there, welcome to Blockhead, the podcast where cartoonists talk comics and just about everything else. My name is Jeff Grogan, and I'll be your host for the next hour or so in a series of conversations with comics creators about their lives, their work, and comics. So sit back and enjoy. Hey gang, welcome to a new episode of Blockhead. Today, as promised, we have Gene Cannonberg Jr., or rather Dr. Gene Cannonberg Jr., here to talk about his brand new Peanuts pop-up book, Here Comes Charlie Brown, from Abrams Publishing. And if you go to the show notes, you'll find a link right there. Head right out and buy it. I'm telling you, this is a wonderful, wonderful book. You get to see it a little bit if you go to YouTube in the next couple of days. I don't have it up yet. I'll have a video up there, and you'll see Gene and I admiring his book during the course of our interview. It's a wonderful book, and I love it. It's a great idea, and it's first of a series, the eventual series. So I can't say enough good things about it. So Gene Cannonberg is here. But interestingly enough, Gene has a really broad and varied background. And so this show is divided into two parts. And one part is going to focus on his work as research and media assistant at the Herskovitz Library of African Studies at Northwestern University. And that is fascinating because Northwestern has an immense collection of comics and African periodicals, ephemera, all of which contain a great many comics. And so Gene walks us through an interesting and brand new to me anyway, a world of comics that he's been exploring and exhibiting when he gets the chance at Northwestern. And people come from all over the world to go to Northwestern, which is just to visit the library, the Herskovitz Library of African Studies, because it's like really the source for African studies. So this is a wonderful interview, and it really opens up a whole new territory of study for me and introduces me to a whole world of comics I wasn't aware of. So that's part one of our interview. Part two focuses on Gene's work as an artist, as a bookmaker, and I don't, again, I know what that sounds like, but part two focuses on his work in making books, and in particular, his pop-up work on Here Comes Charlie Brown, his inspiration, how he put it together, the technique that's involved. All of that is in part two. And the wonderful thing is you don't have to wait for either episode. Both of them are going up today. So you can go to one and come back and check out the other. However you want to listen, it's fine. If you're just here to talk about, listen to Peanuts, that part of the interview is separated from this discussion of Northwestern. But let me tell you, don't miss this discussion because it really is fascinating. Whole world of stuff there at Northwestern. And it's exciting, and it makes me want to go out there and check out the libraries myself. So definitely listen to both parts. However you choose, whether to start with the Peanuts part or start with this, it's up to you. But today you get two episodes of Blockhead, and I couldn't be happier. So, without further ado then, Gene Cannonberg and, well, the world of comics at Northwestern University. Hello, Gene Cannonberg. Welcome to Blockhead.
Thanks for having me, Jeff.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's a pleasure. I am, on the one hand, it's great to be able to reconnect with you after all these years and celebrate this little book, which is popping in and out of the screen. It's Here Comes Charlie Brown, a Peanuts pop-up by Gene Cannonberg.
Oh, this so, little thing?
There it is. There it is. I'm in a closet, so it's not really great for, you know, video recording. So I've got a background on, and it is a very kind of funny thing the way it works. So
yeah, that doesn't work. Mine's unfortunately a real background.
Oh, but that's great, man. My fake background is trying to look as nice as your real background. So I'm trying to look as erudite and intelligent as you do, sitting there.
Yeah, with all my action figures and
Yeah,
books and
great
such.
paraphernalia, man. That's awesome. Excellent. And look at all those cool books. I got to get into that library there. So Gene, I was just asking you, how have you been? And it's been, let's see, the last time I saw you, I think, was, gosh, 12 years ago or something like that. It
Something like that. I remember the first time I saw you
I do too.
because I bought this from you.
I remember. I do remember. And that was a very, I remember that as one of the nicest encounters of that particular show.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. At the time, you had a Tumblr about big comics, if I remember right. Right? It was all about oversized large comics.
No, that wasn't me, but that's
That
a
was,
great idea.
I thought you did. Yeah, it
No,
wasn't you. Then who am
it
I?
wasn't me. No, but that's a cool idea. I mean, I have a lot of big comics, but I have not done that. I
Oh,
was doing comics in beer pairings, but
okay. That's a little bit different. Yeah.
yeah.
So that was at what con was that? It was New York Comic Con.
Probably New York Comic Con, yeah.
Yeah. And I think it was like the first or second because I couldn't get in again after that. It became so popular. As a matter of fact,
Yeah.
that's an ongoing issue. Competition to get into conventions now is so difficult. I'm finding myself locked out of a lot of them. So it's a drag because that's how you catch up with friends, really.
Yeah, and it's been rough. I mean, I'm outside Chicago now, so like I've been going to CAKE every year, which is great if you've never been.
No, I
CAKE
never
is
have.
a lot of fun. I applied for a table once or twice and haven't gotten one back for some of the comics that I was doing. I'm going to try again this year and we'll see what happens. But CAKE is a small it's a small independent show, but it's but and it, I know it's hard to get into, but they've got great stuff.
Oh, awesome.
It's like a mini SPX or a mini Mocha. It's really good.
I've never been to Chicago, one of these days. Maybe. I've
Oh
never
man,
been
you
a
gotta.
lot of places.
Yeah.
Well, how long have you been in Chicago?
Just about 10 years now.
Is it that long? So you,
Yeah.
10 years ago, I think it was a job that took you to Chicago, right? The job you have
Right.
now?
I work at the Herskovitz Library of African Studies at Northwestern University Libraries.
Are you still in that particular library?
Yeah.
Very cool. Awesome. And so you've been there 10 years. Tell
Just
us.
yeah, just about.
Yeah. But before we start talking about peanuts, talk a little bit about that job and about your work because I think it's fascinating.
Yeah, well, it's a while I've been here, I mean, I'm not a librarian. I'm a library assistant, but I've had a lot more opportunity to work with comics than I would have thought. Between curating or co-creating exhibits about comics, both about African comics, and also my second year here, I was able to co-curate an exhibit on comics from the university archives. So I was able to go back and look through like all of the yearbooks and try to find cartoonists like the guy who created G.I. Joe, the character, not the comics, not the action figure. But the character named G.I. Joe went here, and he started off as kind of like a held clone. But we've had so many great cartoonists who've been students come through Northwestern.
Oh yeah, sure.
Robert Layton, who has done a lot of stuff for The New Yorker and things like that. But just lots of people. Disney. One of the Disney directors was from Northwestern, and so I was able to meet a lot of re really interesting people and put together this really great help put together this really great exhibit between students, former students, and also things from our special collections. So and anything from engravings and things like that. I was able to, I don't know how well you know sports cartoonists. I don't know sports cartoons
Yeah,
very well,
I don't
but
either.
Murray Olderman, who was a Northwestern alumnus and who also wound up running, I think, Creator Syndicate. He was an editor as
Oh yeah,
well.
I remember
But
him.
I went out to interview him about a year or two before he passed away, unfortunately, because he donated all of his stuff to Northwestern.
Oh wow.
And so I did like a 2-day career spanning interview with him, where we went through a lot of his scrapbooks and things like this. And that was just a joy. He
Oh, I
was
bet.
an amazing person. He not only because not only was he a great cartoonist, and he worked in like many different mediums, from charcoal to pen and ink to stipple to all different kinds of things like that. But also he was an editor and he was a writer. He interviewed Adolf Eichmann.
Oh my God.
He also fought in World War II, and he stole a Nazi BMW, I think, from a barn house. It was like he did everything. He was just the amazing, amazing guy. But
Wow.
he sat in a room with Eichmann, and I'm like, how do you wrap your mind around that after what you went through? And he was like, this was my job, man. And I'm like, I
Yeah.
can't imagine that kind of journalistic distance, but he had it. He was just like a pure pro. But also he had like this gold MasterCard, not a MasterCard, but it was this gold card that would allow him entrance to any football stadium in the country,
Oh man.
because he had this because he was this amazingly well-known sports cartoonist, and not just well known, but really, really, really good at his job.
His name again was
Murray Olderman.
Murray Olderman. Okay. And
Fantagraphics put out a book of his stuff,
okay.
maybe 7 years ago or something like
Oh
that.
wow. Okay.
It's worth tracking down.
Okay, I gotta look for that. That's cool.
Yeah.
Sounds like a fascinating guy. I mean, really, what a life. And
Yeah, he had an amazing life.
yeah, it's incredible when you start digging into some of these guys, even those that we don't celebrate on a regular basis. I mean,
Yeah, and again, sports cartoonist is one of my big blind spots, but when I had the opportunity, I was like, I will go learn.
Sure, absolutely. I mean, there's so many.
To sit at the feet of somebody who had that much experience and who knew all these people, and I'm like going through his papers, finding stuff because he was in the NCS and stuff like this, so finding things and like cartoons just drawn for him by different cartoonists and things like
I'm
that.
sure. Creator Syndicate had a lot of well-known cartoonists. I mean, before it, I can't remember, did it fold into you what company did it fold into? The company that
Yeah,
be
I can't remember if it was Creators or which syndicate he was ahead of, to be
Oh, okay.
honest. I am
Okay.
it, it's
It'll
been
probably
it's been
say
a
if
while.
Yeah, if we look it up, it's probably in the Fantagraphics collection. There's probably a story about it there.
Yeah, I just can't remember.
Yeah.
Sometimes things just
There were a
blur
lot, there were
through.
so many syndicates back in the day, aside from, King and others. We tend to forget that now as time goes on,
Yeah.
there were, I think, thinking of creators for a moment, I think Johnny Hart, if I remember right, BC was part of Creators Bond.
Probably. And
Yeah.
Northwestern recently, within the past 5 years or so, got the archives for Tribune Syndicate.
Oh yeah, Chicago Tribune Syndicate. Yeah, great,
Yeah.
great syndicate. We're talking Dick Tracy, Little Orphan
Yeah, you're
Annie.
talking, yeah, but like the original syndicate.
Oh my gosh, that's
This is the
incredible.
syndicate of all syndicates,
Yeah,
which
there
was
was.
started because of, was it Barney Google that started it?
Oh.
Because it started because of a comic strip, but they got the archives for everything because of Charles Deering McCormick, who was they had his own museum for a long time and archives, but they were finally going to only focus on his military stuff, so they worked a deal with Northwestern to get all the journalism stuff
Oh
to
wow.
Northwestern.
That's
The North
incredible.
Northwestern actually has a lot of comic stuff that people don't really realize. We've actually got some stuff from like Ohio State has a ton of Chester Gould's Dick Tracy stuff.
Sure.
Like if
Those
because
are good.
when you walk into the Big Island, like the first thing you see is Chester Gould's drawing board.
Right, I remember
Remember
that.
that?
Yep.
Yeah. But we about again maybe 6, 7 years ago, the Chester Gould Museum donated some stuff to us. So we actually have some things that OSU doesn't have because they had pretty much everything, but they don't have the, we got a few things. Like we got like his reference library of Police magazine.
Oh
Like
man, that's cool.
just
That's
amazing stuff
cool.
like that.
Sure. I mean, in those days, right? I mean, I tell the students in my illustration classes, in those days, guys like Joe Kubert and Hal Foster and Alex Raymond and Chester Gould too, all had filing cabinets filled with reference material that they needed. You couldn't Google it, you know what I mean?
Right, yeah. But yeah, but he was actually, but he wasn't just like doing it just for the visual stuff. I mean, he was following police cases, he was following police procedures and things like that.
Because remember,
And then grotesquing the hell out of them,
sure.
but
Well, and you remember in particularly Sundays, there was always something about
the
police, police procedure,
Crime Stoppers
Crime
textbook,
Stoppers
yeah.
textbook. Exactly. Yeah, that was it. Yeah. Very cool. Oh, that's awesome. That's really great. I mean, talk about somebody who wants to sit down and write another biography of Chester Gould. It's great to have that stuff to refer to dig into, it's just a whole nother era too. I mean, it's interesting from the aspect of the history of policing, right? I mean, be kind of interesting to go back and look at some of that stuff, see how
Yeah.
procedures have changed over a
Oh
period.
yeah, we've got a transportation library at Northwestern, which also has a lot of police materials in it also. I never knew that transportation was a thing that could have a library before. But we've got one of the biggest transportation libraries in the world, which is just down the hall from the Herskovitz Library, which is the biggest African studies library in the world. And and to get back to again my actual job, a few years ago, we got about maybe 70 or 80 South African photonovelas. They don't call them photonovelas, but it's basically that. It's but they're basically photo comics that were basically pulps from like the they start. There's a few from the late 60s, but they're mostly 70s and 80s,
I see.
and they're. I think they're all in Afrikaans, but you can pretty much, but Afrikaans is half Dutch, which means it's a little English, which means you can kind of read them a little bit. But they're so, one of them stars a white cowboy called the Leopard, and he wears a leopard mask and he fights evil and all this kind of stuff like
This
this.
is a photo book.
Yeah, they're all photo comics.
So they've got people dressed up as, the leopard, right?
And just like the we've got tons of comics from all across the continent. So you've got like early Dave Gibbons stuff because before Watchmen and stuff like that, Gibbons was working, Gibbons and a few other British comics cartoonists were working for these syndicates that were producing comics that were produced solely for distribution across Africa.
Really? Wow. Who knew?
So yeah,
Who
there's a
knew?
lot of stuff. There's a lot of stuff like that. That again, yeah, just doesn't get talked about much. But we've got a lot of that. But like Zapiro, who was a South, who was and still is a South African editorial cartoonist. He actually went to school in New York at what you call
SVA or
at SVA. Yeah, so he studied under Eisner
Oh,
and
sure.
Spiegelman and stuff like this. And I had no idea because when I was putting together an exhibit on South Africa on African cartoonists, and I called it Voices and Visions. So I was like, so half the exhibit was like comics about Africa for people not from Africa. And the because we have there's a ton of that, so like Tarzan and all that kind of bullshit. And then the other half was cartoonists actually from Africa. And then we had a little iPad thing going where we had interviews with African car with cartoonists from across Africa. And I found this interview with Shapiro, and he starts talking about his education. And I'm like, oh my God, he studied in New York? He studied with Kurtzman? What the hell? Oh my God.
It's a
And
small world.
he becomes this super well, like the most well-known editorial cartoonist in South Africa. And he does a great Nelson Mandela. He said he was a once Nelson Mandela became president, he was in a studio one day, and his assistant says, "Mandela's on the line," and he goes, "Oh God," because he had started doing some cartoons that were critical of Mandela, and he's like, "What am I? Oh God, what am I going to do? Well, I got to take the call. It's the president.
Sure.
Hello, Mr. President. I understand you may be a little upset," and he's like, "No, that is your job. You're supposed to be critical of me. I
Brilliant.
enjoyed it.
Oh,
Keep doing what you're doing." Well, he did it really well, and it's like,
that's fantastic.
yeah. And
What
so
a
we've
great
got
little
like,
anecdote, you know?
yeah, he's got stat. We got some statues of his that some limited edition statues that like have of Mandela, of Zuma, of Archbishop Desmond Tutu, things like this. So we collect we because we're the collection of record in the United States for Africa. We collect anything from academic monographs down to children's books,
Really?
to newspapers, to basically like the equivalent of the National Enquirer,
Of
everything.
right, students of African culture, printed African culture, are going to be coming to Northwestern.
Yeah, students, scholars. We have people from Africa, from the continent, who come to our library because things from their past have been destroyed, and the only place that it exists anymore is in our library.
That's unbelievable. Wow, that's incredible. What a fascinating resource, really. How did it come to be that Northwestern developed such a resource?
A man named Melville Herskovitz in the 1930s was hired to start the anthropology department. And he had been doing some research on the Geechee Gullah people, the Gullah Geechee people off the, in, I think, South Carolina. And he realized that the dialect that they were speaking was tinged by African words. This wasn't just like pidgin English or whatever. A lot of their words were survival words.
I see.
And then he eventually discovered that the largest surviving people of slave descent were actually in Brazil. And he eventually started studying Africa in itself, and he started studying African culture. And he established the first program of African studies in the United States.
Wow, okay.
One of the first three, but it's kind of the first. And his personal library, when he retired, became the core of what became the Herskovitz Library of African Studies.
I see.
And it came with certain restrictions that it had to be a separate library within the bigger library. And we have endowments up the wazoo, so we buy whatever we want, basically. We have our artist books. We have artist books like you would not believe.
Oh, wow.
Just amazing, amazing stuff. I was actually
Wow.
setting up an artist book exhibit a couple of weeks ago. It's an honor to work at a place like this. Plus, we also have like we have books dating back to the 17th century.
My gosh.
It's just
Phenomenal.
really fascinating. And you've got and so we got any anything that's printed by, about, or from Africa, we try to get, because we're not a, we don't exist we don't exist simply, and simply is a bad word, but we don't exist just to support teaching at Northwestern. We're there to support any research that anyone in the world wants to do.
Fascinating. That's
So
incredible. What a great reason.
we have people who come to visit us from all over.
That's great.
Again, whether they're from the continent, from any place. We had a person come here from Germany 2 weeks ago, just to look through some newspapers, because we're the only institution in the world that has these newspapers from the 1950s,
Incredible.
things like
So,
that. And again, and half the stuff is full of cartoons, is full of comics. Some of it is, I found Nancy in so many languages you wouldn't believe, but also a lot of indigenous stuff that's never been collected. And if I could, I could spend all my time just putting together collections of this stuff. In fact, we had one editorial cartoonist, I forget where he was from, a few years ago. He came to our library to just get photos of all of his cartoons, because he had no way to get photos of all of his published cartoons in his country, because the papers were all gone and he never had a chance to keep them when he was publishing. So he had to come to us.
Thank God you guys are there, you know?
It's really amazing to get that.
Yeah, because so much of it would have been lost. It sounds like you could spend your life just there in the stacks going through
Oh,
all this
yeah.
stuff.
Between the stacks and the rare books and all the other stuff.
Do you
But
get a chance to share the riches of that collection in
oh,
comics?
we whenever possible. For the comics, again we've done a few exhibits. I try to sneak in comics into whatever we try to do pop-up exhibits, like whenever we have someone come to visit, and then we have enough time frame beforehand. We try to set up thematic pop-up exhibits just for the day whenever possible, when I know that there's a comic that's available, a possibility. We'll do that. I published an article a year or so back about, because when the Black Panther movie came out, suddenly everybody loved Africa. Well, they loved Wakanda, but my curator was like, well, we should maybe kind of jump on this bandwagon a little bit. So she started buying a lot of Black Panther related materials and stuff like this. And sometimes we have like grade school or high school groups come in. And so if we've got like a nice big Black Panther statue, and we've got some of the books and t-shirts and action figures and stuff like that. But we pair that with other things. And I wrote an article, and then last year I did an exhibit. I did a whole exhibit where I paired, like there's one whole case where I just paired like statues and action figures with statues and toys and other things, Black Panther things, and then other things. So like I had like the Black Panther statue and a couple of action figures, but then I had like those Zapiro political figures and some Thornwood villager carvings, and we have a Barack Obama action figure. An AIDS nurse from South Africa, and Nelson Mandela figures, even a transformer from the of an off-brand transformer from the 2010 World Cup that was held in South Africa. It's a transform. It's a transforming. Ro it's a robot that transforms into a soccer ball. So, and then also like a we have like a coffee cups from the Black Panther, and paired those with some China that was celebrating Liberia's 50th Independence Day or something like that. So just trying to show that if you're interested in this kind of stuff, we try to do material culture also. And then I gave a big lecture, which actually is on YouTube now also. I called it Wakanda as a Window to the Study of Africa.
So tell me about that. Tell me about
Yeah.
the premise.
So basically, it was basically that kind of stuff. Like, here's the Wakandan language. And so for that, I started with the comics and looked at things, and I also went to the movies because people know the movies, and like the language in the movies is actually Xhosa. They call it Wakandan, but it's actually Xhosa, because of the actor who portrayed T'Chaka. That was his native language, so he just said we should do this. Because so they didn't make up a language; they're just using an
That
actual
was
language.
Chadwick, was that?
It wasn't Chadwick Boseman; it was the man who played his father,
Oh, I see. Okay.
and then he taught Chadwick,
Oh,
and
okay.
then that just kind of became,
Yeah,
so
sure.
anytime anybody's speaking Wakandan, but visual Wakandan, that's a cipher. They took two different actual African scripts in BC, and I forget what the other one was. And then they kind of made a third thing out of them that looks kind of Afro futuristic, but that's actually a substitution cipher. You can spell it so they can just spell things out. So you can substitute, and that's just English. But it looks like it's a different language, but it's not. So I could do that, and then I could say, but if you want to learn how to speak Wakandan, here's a children's book to teach you how to speak Xhosa, and here's a Xhosa dictionary, and here's a grammar for adults and things like this. Here's a Wakandan statue. Here's a statue by a mid-20th century reactionary artist who also helped put together one of the music festivals and things like this. Wakanda has this magic metal
Oh, right.
by vibranium.
Vibranium, yep.
And the one thing they never tell you about vibranium is how it actually gets mined.
Yeah, it's
We
true.
they, they That just kind of gets glossed over.
Yeah, like it does
Yeah.
in a lot of ways. Yeah. Yeah. How do
Yeah.
we get these resources? Nobody
Yeah,
wants
how
to.
do we get the resources? Yeah.
Yeah.
But every one of you in the audience has magic African metal in your pocket right now.
In
It's
our
called
phones.
coltan. It in its raw form, it's called coltan, and it's in every cell phone on the planet. And a lot of the mining is overseen by warlords, and it's child labor. So you've got magic African metal, vibranium, it's sound, it's in your pocket, in your phone.
Yeah, incredible.
So it's analogous, but child labor.
Right, exactly.
And just try, not everything was, I didn't want everything to be nice and light. I wanted to draw some real world consequences into this too. But also, like, women in STEM, Shuri gives you women in STEM. And so we had some studies about women in STEM in Africa. All this kind of stuff like that. So you can just draw it out into a lots of different art history. I think, have you seen Hugo Canuto's work?
No, I have not.
He's a Brazilian artist who did a book called Tales of the Orishas that was put out by Megascope, the Abrams imprint that John Jennings edits.
I see.
Tales of the Orishas, and the Orishas are basically West African gods who came over with the enslaved people. And before it was just published this past year, but I discovered him on Instagram several years ago, before anything was ever translated or whatever. But I saw these images, and he did these things. Like, one of them was his first drawings were like he did version of Avengers, the cover to Avengers number 4, but it was all done with the Orisha gods instead of the Avengers.
Oh, cool.
And he was doing all these different things like that, and it was just brilliant. It's just absolutely brilliant. And so I talked to my curator and said, maybe we should do some of this, because even though it's not African, it's clearly based from Africa, and we do some of the Orisha stuff that kind of shows up over in the West. So she's been buying she bought all the posters and things like this. And several years ago, there was a Afrofuturism conference on campus, and myself and the African studies librarian, we set up a huge table at the conference of Afrofuturism stuff, with, again, with the Black Panther in the middle. But we had books and games, and I brought all these posters also in a portfolio of the Orishas. So during the breaks in the conference, people would come and look at the table and stuff like that. And this one woman just kept looking at these posters and she kept staring at one in particular because they're all these very powerful, they all look like they were designed by Jack Kirby, very powerful black figures. And she's staring at this one. And finally, I came over and said, you seem really interested in this. And I talked a little bit about where it came from. And she's like, I'm from Brazil. Do you want to see what we see when we're shown this goddess? She pulls up her phone, does a search, and shows me this very thin, white, blonde woman. And she's like, that's what they've turned this goddess into in our culture. What I'm seeing here, this is what I've always pictured in my head. And it was like an artist channeling pure Kirby and also doing what he felt right for this goddess. And here was this woman who was completely vibing
Sure.
along with that.
That's great.
And it was just like, wow.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Great moment there, being able
Yeah,
to.
it was like that was one of those teaching moments where I learned as much as she did.
Yeah, sure. No, that's great. What, Gene, what is your PhD in?
It's an English literature PhD, but my PhD, my dissertation was on comics.
Okay. Yeah.
I did it on basically page design in for Winsor McCay, Art Spiegelman, and Chris Ware.
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. That's an interesting thread through all of them. Yeah.
Yeah, I realized that to be a book, I really needed to have another chapter on Harvey Kurtzman, and I just never had the opportunity to do that.
Be great to do that someday, though. That's a book
Yeah,
that,
in my copious free time,
yeah, whatever free time you have.
but at this point, I've got so many other interests that that book will never happen.
Well, yeah, and among those is making comics of your own. So that was part one of my discussion with Gene Cannenberg. Part two should be available as we speak, and that's where we talk all about Peanuts, talk all about his wonderful new book, Here Comes Charlie Brown, Peanuts Pop-Up from Abrams Books. So, without delay, or maybe take a break. Maybe take a break, maybe get some air, walk around, have a cup of coffee, a cup of tea, a nosh here and there. And then be sure to listen right away to Gene Cannenberg Part 2 or Gene Cannenberg Here Comes Charlie Brown. And enjoy that discussion about the making of this wonderful new pop-up book, and about pop-up books in general, and about book binding, and all kinds of great stuff. And you're really going to enjoy it. So check out Gene Cannenberg and the new Peanuts pop-up book, Here Comes Charlie Brown, and that is available right here, wherever you're listening to this podcast right now. Hey, I'd like to suggest to you while I'm here, head on over to Patreon, patreon.com/Jeff Grogan, GEOFFGROGAN, and join us there because there's lots of great stuff. And anybody who joins at the paid subscription level right now, between now and June 1st, is going to get a free signed copy of my mega opus, Donut and the Cheeseburger, Race for the White House 2024. You don't want to miss it. It's a great tabloid newspaper, 20 pages of full-color comics, all about politics of the day. So check that out on Patreon. Become a paid subscriber now between now and June 1st, and you'll receive a free copy of that. So join us there, won't you? And more immediately, join us, Gene and myself, in part two of this discussion, wherever you get your podcasts right now. For now, I'll say so long, and I'll see you over there.